Hello, and welcome to episode 115 of Speak Beastie for June 14th, 2020. I'm Helene.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Shannon.
And we have our newest host joining us today, and his name is... Rex.
Hey,
woo!
That's me.
Round of applause. Yay. For Rex. I had such a strong inclination to say Sexy Rexy because that's what I used to call him when we were in high school, but that would have just been not the best thing to introduce you on, I feel
I'm
like.
So excited about this new dynamic that you guys are going to bring to the show.
It's going to be definitely interesting.
For anybody who didn't listen to the episode that Rex and I did a few, was it months ago at this point?
It was the first episode of 2020.
Oh, was it?
So basically, five years ago.
Yeah, anyway. That's awesome. I didn't realize that. But for those people who don't know, Rex and I have been friends for, how many years
like
now? 10, I don't know.
10 years. Because we met
something
junior
like
year
that.
And we graduated in 2011, so it's like our 10-year anniversary.
Oh.
Fresh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we met in math class in high school, and then we bonded over Harry Potter, and now we are both doing Speak Beastie, which is really exciting.
Wow.
Yay.
It is.
That's awesome. I'm like no longer friends with anyone from high school, so kudos to you.
Rex is like
friends with
her. He's like my only high school friend.
I talked to her and like one other person from high school.
Yeah.
Man. I mean, my roommate and I have been friends since her freshman year of college, which is almost as long.
Nice.
So. Yeah.
Yeah, it didn't hurt that he moved to Orlando for grad school and therefore made it very easy for me to go to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter whenever I visited
him.
I think
that definitely helped our friendship.
It definitely did. Thanks for doing
that. No, I definitely had people visit me for only that reason, and I'm like, I've accepted this.
Everyone needs that Orlando friend, you know?
That's what I'm here for.
It is what it is.
Thanks, Rex, for being that for me.
No problem. It got me to do the career that I wanted to do, so it was worth it. And I got all the butterbeer I wanted.
Now, there are four of us, so I had to check what our Hogwarts houses are.
I'm a Hufflepuff. Helene's a Hufflepuff.
Me too.
No, you guys are all Hufflepuffs.
Hmm. You're outnumbered, Shannon.
I'm a Ravenclaw. Ugh.
This is a very puff-heavy episode.
At least we don't have any Gryffindors or Slytherins on, am I right?
Gryffindor's my secondary house.
Slytherin's my secondary house, unless you
Slytherin's
ask Helene.
My secondary
then she
house.
Says a different house, but she's wrong.
You know what? I was honestly, like, before this one, I was thinking, like, there's no way that there's going to be four of us, right? Like, I mean, like, Rex and I haven't spoken before, but I was like, I don't know. He could be a Slytherin. He's got that vibe. And I was wrong.
See, Helene?
But...
No,
close.
No, he's a Ravenclaw. We have
Slytherin's
this very
my secondary,
long
so.
Debate.
Gryffindor is the one that I'm least like, and the first one that Pottermore put me into, and I was like, incorrect. Start again.
Nope.
I did. I created a Pottermore account, and I answered like the opposite, and it put me in Gryffindor, which makes sense because that's my least house. If that makes no sense.
I just always get Hufflepuff on everything.
Same.
So I guess it's
even
true.
Before Pottermore, I was getting Hufflepuff on random BuzzFeed quizzes.
I tried to trick the Pottermore quiz into giving me Ravenclaw because I like blue is my favorite color. So,
I mean, trying to trick the quiz is a pretty Ravenclaw thing to do, but
yeah, I'd say Ravenclaw is probably my secondary. I could see it. But then I kept getting Hufflepuff, and I was like, yeah, this is probably right.
Okay, let's first have our little break, and then the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
Here we are in the Phoenix Register, because we have to be. Once again, J.K. Rowling has gone on Twitter, and then later her website, to spout transphobic nonsense. We have already addressed her transphobic views on the show a few times. That was your first episode, Rex, right?
Yeah, that was my first episode was the December tweet.
Yes, so...
So it's Rex's fault. Yeah.
Full circle.
On this episode, and that's when everything hit the
J.K. fan. Rowling knew.
She's like, I'm going to give them something to talk about.
So yeah, I addressed it on like the episode that came out before that, and then we as a team addressed it in full in the next episode. But we want to make it clear again that we do not agree with her transphobia. Speak Beastie is about love and magic and community. And we as a team fully support trans people. Trans women are women, trans men are men, non-binary people are people. As I've mentioned before, I myself am trans, non-binary. And it has been really sad and disappointing to watch someone I admire act so hateful. But I've come to the point where I'm okay with basically leaving J.K. Rowling behind while still appreciating her work and examining it from a critical lens, as we have been for years. Not just on Speak Beastie, but on other podcasts, just in fandom. And I know that there are people out there who still support me and my fellow trans people, including everyone else who works on the show, but also the multiple Harry Potter and Fantastic Beasts actors who have spoken out against JK's incorrect opinion, including Daniel Radcliffe, Emma Watson, Eddie Redmayne, Bonnie Wright just tweeted.
She did?
Oh, she yes, did like 5 minutes yeah. before we started recording.
Yeah, so just like half an hour ago. There's like someone else saying something, which is great, really great to see. I already recorded a like separate bonus episode that will probably go out to our Patreon supporters, if not everyone, where I go further into the whole thing. But for now, I just want to say, you know, to my fellow trans people, I'm sorry that J.K. Rowling doesn't understand us. But there's still love in this world, there's still space for you in this world and in this fandom, and we at Speak Beastie are going to continue doing our best to bring the love and make the space. Now that's all I have to say about J.K. Rowling, and while she may technically be more relevant to this podcast, there is of course something even bigger going on in the world right now that we do want to address, that she didn't bother to address, but we want to.
Yes. All right. So we as a community here at Speak Beastie also want to make it clear that we support the Black Lives Matter movement in light of recent events, including but not limited to the murders of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, and Breonna Taylor. While all of our hosts are either white or white passing, our eyes, ears, and hearts are open, and we are going to do our best to lift up voices of color within the community. Our producers have reached out to a few creators of color within the fandom to see if they'd be willing to share some thoughts with us on this. We've also decided that, in light of recent events and because we feel so passionately about promoting social change that brings equality and acceptance to all, part of our Patreon funds each month will be donated to a worthy organization. We will choose a different organization each month with the help and input of our listeners, but for the most immediate future, these donations will focus on helping the trans community and people of color. We encourage all of our listeners, but especially those who are directly affected by these issues, to reach out to us if you have any additional thoughts or suggestions on how we can help. And on a lighter note...
yeah.
There is no good transition. No. But we do have shirts available. Yay.
Not just shirts.
and stickers and pins. The pins are really cute. I put it on my denim jacket, but mainly shirts, because that order form actually closes at midnight tonight, the night that this is being released. Yes. So, June 14th.
There's two shirts, and one of them is a quote by me.
Yes.
Which
Shannon,
is...
But you're misquoted, Shannon.
Shannon is immortalized well, on a t-shirt.
I think I said it differently, like, when I was suggesting it, so... Probably. It was my second version of it, which is maybe the real these were the friends we found along the way.
There's been many iterations of that quote through the years, so...
So that's my final version, and I stand by that statement, I reiterate it now. The real beasts were the friends we found along the way.
Well, now it's in print.
It's exactly. Going to be immortalized now.
Yes, exactly. You're immortalized on a t-shirt. The other one is also a really, really cute illustration that Cheyenne, our graphic designer, made of a Niffler holding a little Hello, My Name Is sticker, and it says pastries. So it's very cute.
It's really cute.
It is a cute one.
I saw the two shirts and I was like, maybe I'll just buy the Niffler one and not the one that's my quote. But then I bought both.
You have to have your quote.
Yeah, I was like, I guess.
We highly recommend that you buy both if you are listening to this.
Yeah. And the stickers and pins. You will want them. Are cute.
Yes.
And it's just the shirts that close at midnight, the day this episode releases, right?
Yes. The stickers and pins are just available. We should probably give people links.
That would be
http://. No, I'm just kidding.
The pins and stickers are on our Etsy, which is just Speak Beastie on Etsy.
Yeah.
The shirt.
So there will be a link in the description.
The shirt. It's like a not easy. It's media. It's like pogo.undergroundshirts.com/collection/speakbc. It's very long. So look at our social media. If you're part of the Speak BC comment room on Facebook, we've posted it there. We posted it on Twitter.
Twitter.com/speakbc is the pinned tweet right now.
And we can get social media posted definitely on Sunday. But
all right,
what's that you hear, guys?
I think I hear some owls in the distance.
I think I hear them too. Maybe I should open my window and let them in.
Go careful.
Well, don't let them fly into the window. We don't want any dead owls.
That's why I should open the window. So this owl post kind of came from Helene and myself in the common room.
I will take all of the credit.
So Helene posted two photos of the Akemi, one being the Funko Pop and one being from...
It's the Noble Collection creatures thing. I don't know. Yeah.
And the Funko Pop has horns and the Noble Collection Akemi has no horns. So since Helene and I go back 10-ish years, I sassily commented... Males have horns, females do not. Males use them to attract a mate similar to deer. However, the horns do not fall off like deer. And then we kind of got in this argument in the comments. And it went on for a long time. Yeah, so my theory about Akemis is that it could be like through evolution. Or it could be, like, regional because they are found in the Far East and India. So I kind of did some research. And it's just, like, maybe one of the... Maybe the horns are in, like, southern India, kind of, like... And the ones without horns are in the Himalayas. I don't know. I threw in evolution, and then Helene yelled at me about that because they're magical beasts, but evolution can still be a thing. So what do you think, Helene?
I think you are just making this stuff up. I think that it was an oversight on some sort of like WB's side where they didn't realize that like one version of the merchandise that they created had horns and the other didn't. And I think that we even debated this a little bit in the comments as far as like whether or not the movie itself,
someone did
the Akemi
post
had horns.
Photos. I don't remember who.
I think there were like two separate scenes where one, like, well, one scene it had horns and one it didn't.
Watch the first Fantastic Beasts because that's where the alchemy came in. And the alchemy had horns both in the Macy's scene where, like, it's big taking up the attic thing with the demiguys. And then the little baby ones in Newt's case, they both had horns.
Okay, so it's not like something they grow. Maybe they're literally like hatched like with giraffes. Horns because if they have babies, they already have the horns. So it's not something that they like grow as an adult. That's interesting. Also, we looked in your illustrated version of the Fantastic Beasts
and
book.
They don't the textbook. Have horns.
No, they look like big seagulls. Like they look like big seagulls
have,
with legs.
They have legs
and like Yeah, they definitely didn't have horns. It was a very strange illustration. I don't really understand. Like, it looks absolutely nothing like what it
but
does in the movie or any of the merchandise.
The beasts in this don't look like the beasts in the movie, and that's just kind of the illustrator's depiction. And like,
yeah, in case you are forgetting, in all of the not you, like listeners, in case you listeners are forgetting, the alchemy in the movie and all of the merchandise do not have legs. They're like big snakes with
wings.
But for some reason, the one in the illustrated edition of Fantastic Beasts has legs. So I guess the next question from, you know, we move from do alchemies have horns
do alchemies have legs? Going off of the horns, the alchemy in the illustrated has like weird like eyebrow feather things that look like horns.
I don't know. Feathers that don't look like horns to me, but that's just me. I don't know. I don't know. I think that it's, I mean, I don't think J.K. Rowling put any deep thought into whether or not like male versus female alchemies have horns or like with certain alchemies
obviously
from different regions have horns.
The right thought into that.
I don't think she
cares, but I honestly, I'm guessing it's probably just an oversight on the merchandise.
I still
end,
like
but it's
my
just
theory,
like,
though.
No, your theory is based in science
solid
and fact.
Theories.
It's just bullshit.
And you said it so confidently. Like, when you commented, I was like,
oh,
okay.
Oh, I 100% said that sassily, only because it was Helene. If anyone else did it, I would not have commented.
Yeah, he was just also, like, matter-of-factly, like, I just made this thing up, and it is 100% true.
She's just like, where's your source? And I was just like, myself.
Cite your
seems
sources.
Legit. Like, I don't know.
So I won the debate.
Did
that's
you win
great.
The debate?
Honestly.
No, I still think I won. Listeners, who do you think won? Let us know.
The podcast question.
Do alchemies have horns?
All right. Well, there are no alchemies in this movie. So let's talk about
so
the no
the
alchemy
elves
movie.
So did the owls just fly in here with like an alchemy?
Yeah. Oh, it's not an owl post. It's
and
an alchemy post.
Of y'all's discussion.
We totally missed an opportunity.
It's not the owl post. It's alchemy post. They alchemy came in post. Today.
Well, they're leaving now.
Bye, alchemies.
Did they just
see
eat
later.
The owls?
They transformed into owls.
All transfigured.
The real owls were the alchemies that we found along the way.
Buy the t-shirt. Okay, anyway. So our main discussion, we're continuing on with breaking down 10-minute portions of Crimes of Grindelwald. And for this episode, we're discussing from the movie timestamp 50 minutes in to an hour in. And in the screenplay book, that's scenes 52 to 61. So our section starts right after Queenie's panic attack in the streets of Paris. And the last episode, they ended with talking about Queenie turning to look at Rosier as she taps her shoulder. And we have just one line of dialogue in this scene before we switch to the next one in our allotted time slot. And that's Rosier asking Queenie if she's all right.
In French.
Yes.
Yes. And she's so calming. I'm like, I'd go with her.
She's very mesmerizing.
I just kind of thought it as like Queenie is crying in the rain in Paris. Like she's wet. No one's like comforting her. And then this random lady just goes to her. And she looked happy and kind of like, oh, you like care about why I'm crying and you want me to feel good. And I think that kind of is how she like opened the door to like joining Grindelwald's side.
Yeah. I mean, like, if you're going to walk up to a random stranger on the street, you're probably a good person, like, to just comfort somebody who's obviously having a breakdown.
So I could walk up to any random person who seems to be in distress on the street, say, are you all right? And they'll join my cause.
This is just a theory right now.
Well, they'll probably trust you. Like, if I was having a meltdown on the sidewalk and no one stopped and one person did, I'd probably be like, yeah, you're obviously a good person. But that's just the trusting Hufflepuff in me.
I'd be like, leave me alone. I don't know who you are.
I have stranger danger. I don't like people.
But anyway, so then we change scenes. And it's scene 53 at the bird market. Which this is just another thing in this movie that makes no sense if you're watching it on screen. I had to read the script to understand what was happening here, because it's literally labeled bird market, and I never understood that that was a thing when I was watching the movie.
I've, like, been to this market.
Really? So, like, you knew what a bird market was, well, but I didn't.
I didn't know what a bird market was, but then, in the doc, it says a, like, location to, like, where it is, and I was like, oh, I've been there before. Oh, just across the Notre Dame bridge. And I was like, oh.
So when you were there, I guess my question is when you were watching.
I went there not on a Sunday. So like, there were no birds.
Oh, okay. I was going to ask when you were watching this movie for the first time, did you look at it and you were like, oh, that's that bird market in Paris.
Oh, I had absolutely no idea where they were. Like, I wasn't like, oh, I know exactly where they are. This is like their street address.
Oh my gosh. Well, I had to Google it because I was like, what the f*** is a bird market? But apparently this is a thing, and the Paris Bird and Flower Market has actually been around for more than 200 years. And I found this quote from the Boston Globe that says, "We can't imagine a more delightful way to spend a Sunday morning than visiting the charming
Marché aux Oiseaux."
There you go. Perfect.
5 years of French.
Market of Birds in Paris. Blank. Rex, fill in the blank.
A blank. Are you talking about Louis Lapine?
Yes.
That's Lapine. Okay.
Louis Lapine Square.
Marjolaine is either going to love me or hate me.
Where's Mara Wicho when we need her?
So Louis Lapine Square, just across from the Notre Dame Bridge on the island of
Île de la Cité. Island of the City.
It's home to the famous flower market. On Sunday, the birds arrive. So apparently, the flower sellers take the day off on Sunday.
It's like a fish market.
Yeah. Oh, that's why I'll post.
And then the bird sellers take over on Sundays when the flower sellers are off.
I feel like you should have added an ellipsis to the birds arrive to make it more spooky.
Yes.
Mainly because birds terrify me.
So, like, is this like an outdoor Petco that only sells birds?
I guess, but according to the Boston Globe, they also sell, like, gerbils and hamsters and stuff and fish.
Huh.
So it's like an outdoor Petco.
Yeah, outdoor Petco.
Crazy. But you can also buy birdseed there, which in the screenplay, it says that Credence swipes some from a stall.
That looked like a loaf of bread. Like, I totally thought he took some bread, and I was just like, I thought it would have some meaning. Like, I was like, oh, he's going to, like, open it, like, later, and it's going to be something, and if he does open it, we don't see it, or...
Well, he uses the bird feed that he steals the bird feed from this bird market and, like, feeds it to his, like, little baby phoenix or whatever, right?
Yeah. But we don't see that for 20 minutes, so...
Yeah. And we also still don't know where the hell he got the phoenix. Like, it just popped up.
It just appeared,
because
he's a Dumbledore.
If he had snatched the bird seed here and then, like, immediately gone over to his baby phoenix, I would have been like, oh, okay. Well, maybe I would have, but no. I didn't even notice this was a bird market until this time watching. So
this is just another, like, we talked about this. Amy and I were on an episode of dissecting the movie a couple of episodes ago, and we talked about how, like, this is, like, you, when you're do, this is a visual medium. Movies are a visual medium, and when you're explaining things on a visual medium, you have to do them obviously and plainly, and you just, you can't just, like, this is just a weird thing to have with no context in a film. Like, you have to say these things with words. Like, Nagini could have been like, oh, look, let's go check out
let's
this.
Let's go to the bird market.
Yeah, let's go check out this bird market. And then Credence goes, oh, there's some bird seed over there. I should get some for the little bird that I've been, you know, taking care of. You know, you got.
But we don't know about the bird yet. If,
yeah.
If it could be a fun little, like, foreshadowing. I don't know. I have a bird. Wait till you see it. Like, just say
that. Yeah, I mean. If you had seen the bird first, and then he was swiping the bird seed, that would also be easier to understand. I mean, it still should have been filmed better.
Why didn't he? They could have showed him, like, finding this bird at the bird market.
Like, did it randomly appear in his pocket? Like, did he find it, like, on the ground below a tree?
He looked in the mirror, Vera said, thought about having a bird in his pocket, and it showed up there.
Well, see, this... stealing the bird seed does, like, imply that he already has this bird, but, like, we don't see it.
But do phoenixes eat bird seed?
I'm sure.
He probably doesn't even know.
What else would they eat? They're birds.
They don't need to eat anything.
I can consult.
Are you looking up what do phoenixes eat?
I'm totally seeing what it says in the book. It doesn't say any. Oh, they eat
bird seed.
The phoenix is a gentle creature and has never been known to kill and eats only herbs, or herbs, if you're from the UK.
Wait, she really included that in the book?
Yeah, it's like the third or fourth sentence.
Well, he's feeding them, that little baby phoenix, something that it is not interested in.
Well, it's bird seeds, not bird herbs.
I just find it funny that out of all of the scenes that they cut from this film, they kept this one.
Yeah. I guess it's
like,
literally...
what was the point?
Is it just...
I still believe this movie's going to make more sense when they're all out.
I feel like they kept this in just because of Grimson, like, creepily watching them or something.
Yeah.
Was he at the bird market?
Yeah, he was watching them.
I don't know. Grimson, I didn't know who his name was until I opened the doc. And someone's like, Grimson. And Mike, I guess that's evil, man.
Yeah. I think, Helene, were you on the episode where we were talking about Grimson creeping?
Yep. I believe so.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just what he does. He just hangs out in the shadows and is like, hey.
Grimson, professional creeper.
Yeah, I put in the doc here, like, the movie really expected me to remember what Grimson looked like.
Did they even name him, like,
not in
when
the movie.
He was first introduced? Like, it's only in the screenplay where it's, like, Grimson.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they only say his name in the screenplay.
They might say it, like, at that hearing thing.
Let me double check. While we're talking about it.
But if they do, it's like once and like super brief.
I don't
brief.
Think they do.
And I'm terrible with names, so even if that's how we like met Newt Scamander, I still wouldn't know who he was.
Yeah, literally.
I would need like 12 people being like, oh, Newt, to be like, oh, like, I guess that's the main character.
When Grimson enters, Newt's just like, what's he doing here? And no one is ever like, this is Grimson.
What's he doing here? This is Grimson. He is here to do this thing. But no.
Newt should have been like, Grimson, what are you doing here?
Yeah. God, that's how you do a movie. That's how a visual medium is supposed to be handled.
Ugh. Oh my God.
Well, that's why, like, in like pilot TV shows, which like this is not a TV show, like they just introduce like a lot of people, and that's how they introduce people is they always say their name first, so you're like, oh, this person's name is Charles.
Well, yeah, no, a way that TV shows do this really successfully is that they have a like newcomer, or like say it's at like a school, they have a new student arrive that becomes friends with the main character, and then she or he has to explain, you know, everything that's going on to this new person, and that new person is a catalyst basically for the audience, so that they can learn everything through that person's eyes. This, I mean, it's hard to do in a movie, especially the sequel of a, you know, a series.
A movie.
Yeah, it's a series. So, I mean, it's hard to do that, especially in the second movie. But there are ways. Come on. There are ways.
So in scenes 54 to 56, that is Credence and Nagini going to Irma Dugard's apartment. And I just noted, I love when they walk into like the building, they have this really nice wide angle lens that they're using in the hallway, so you get like the little like warped walls.
Cinematography. So
cool. Yeah.
It was a really cool like transition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's very like wearing a GoPro.
Now the screenplay says, and maybe that's what the cinematography is trying to like really show, but the screenplay really emphasized that this whole time Nagini is like sensing danger.
Mm-hmm.
And that's I didn't really get that from
I kind of got her
performance like, until the end of
that's
it.
Why you have the character say something like this place is making me uneasy. I think that there's something wrong here.
See, I got the idea that like she's worried, but I didn't get the like the screenplay is like implying that obviously she is sensing Grimson is like following them, and that's not what I got.
No,
and it's like is she that has like a maledictus senses. Thing?
I don't know.
Or is that just kind of sometimes you just get spooky vibes? You're like, ooh, spooky.
I don't know. This whole scene gives spooky vibes. Like,
is it spooky or snaky
or spoopy?
Which is it?
I don't know. And then one thing I noted was when they were like going into Irma's apartment, there was like something that looked like a Celtic knot.
Yeah, I noticed that too.
On the door. Huh. And then I tried to do some research, and then I thought there was one type of Celtic knot and there's not. And then I was too lazy to find the Celtic knot that it looked like.
I wasn't even sure if it was supposed to be a Celtic knot or just like something, but I did notice that and I was like, that looks like a Celtic knot.
She also has just like a ton of like lace and fabric just like hanging from the ceiling randomly.
So according to the screenplay, it's just like laundry drying.
Oh.
But in the movie,
that was like curtains.
Yeah,
and it's like dust covers.
This whole scene like reads different in the screenplay. It's very odd.
Maybe I should buy the screenplay.
I think I should get screenplays because I think I will just understand things more.
It's really interesting to read it while you're watching and kind of like note.
Okay, rear of 18 Rue Philippe Lorand. A door stands open. I just really
like how like. The screenplay addresses the address because that is not.
Yeah.
It is not shown.
No.
Like, why does it matter?
And apparently, this address doesn't even exist in modern Paris.
That like the street or like the physical building?
It's the building number is 18.
Yeah. And Rue, I believe, is Philippe. Like avenue.
Yeah. Rue is like street. And then like the street name is Philippe Laurent.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I looked this up and HP Lexicon says it's not a real address. It either had to have been renamed after 1927 or is just completely made up for the story.
Oh, it's 100% made up.
Which is just funny, like that you would note this specific address.
So it has them outside. It says, a door stands open into the yard. They slide through it into a servant's passageway. Nagini's nostrils flare. Her eyes dart around. There is something wrong. They proceed toward the stairs. Landing outside maid's room. Credence and Nagini reach the landing. A door stands ajar. A shadow cast by lamplight. What seems to be a woman sewing. The shadow pauses in its work. Nagini is edgy, nervous, looking around. Mended and freshly washed clothing hang from racks on the ceiling. They can see the shadow of a woman. Nagini's senses are hyper-alert. She can smell danger. The shadow stands. They move through the hanging fabric toward her. Then a tiny hand pushes the last piece of fabric aside.
A tiny hand?
That's just, like, completely...
Is that, like, Irma's hand? Because her hands are not tiny.
Yeah, Irma. She has, half-elf, half-human. It's what the screenplay
says. She has very lanky
fingers,
and she only has three fingers, not four.
She has four. She has three long fingers and a thumb.
A thumb is not a finger.
Oh my god.
We are not going to debate this right now.
Okay, I'm glad that you only have eight fingers.
Two Akamis have fingers.
Oh my god.
Something
always
else
the Akamis.
About the movie in this part that's different from the screenplay is... Actually, I thought... That this wasn't in the screenplay, but it is. But Nagini says, this is your son, madam. I missed the line in the screenplay. It is in there. But very confusing when you're watching this and you have no context for this scene.
I was very confused.
And Nagini speaks French, we learn, from that one line.
Or that's the only thing she knows how to say.
Your son, madame.
Yeah, I use that phrase all the time.
Yeah. And then Credence is just speaking in English, just hoping that she understands.
Well, it's because he grew up in New York.
Yeah. I'm just saying that he just hopes that this lady understands English.
Oh, okay.
I mean, it's a very American thing to do. Just go into another country and just assume everybody does. Speaks English, which, so. Yeah, she does. That's true.
When I was in Paris and I would say bonjour, like they'd be like bonjour and I'd be like bonjour, and then I'd be ready to order my croissant or whatever, they would hear how I pronounced bonjour and then just start speaking English. And I was like, okay, I tried.
So Irma answers and she tells Credence, I am not your mother. I was only a servant. You were a beautiful baby and you are a beautiful man.
Except that the baby and the man are not the same person.
But well, so, but then there's the theory of Credence being Ariana's obscurus. So then
what does that have to do with this?
But then it's just like, I'm not your mother. So like who is his mother? I see.
It's all very confusing because none of it makes any sense. And yeah. Maybe if before this point they had like shown us the birth certificate, this would be a little bit easier to understand, but it's not.
Yeah.
And we don't get an explanation because he's like, why was your name on my birth on my adoption paper? That's what he's talking about, not birth certificate, but whatever.
Yeah.
And she doesn't answer that, first of all. She just starts talking. But she doesn't get a chance to answer it. And I'm like, man, Irma could have just blown this whole series wide open.
That's why she had to die.
Well, that's why Grimson had to get all spooky and go into the wall.
But the thing is, she has
it. So frustrated.
She has information about Corvus Lestrange, but he's not Corvus Lestrange. Because he was switched with Corvus on the boat. So, I mean, all the stuff that Irma can tell us is not actually relatable to Credence or his story. Because that's he's true. A random baby on the boat.
True.
It's all so much.
But Irma does say she gave Credence, or the baby, whoever he was, to Mrs. Barebone because she was supposed to look after him.
But why?
Right. And how did that happen? Like, how did Mary Lou know about the baby? How did she,
did she know that he was... Because, so, Credence is now Corvus Lestrange. Because the babies were switched.
Mm-hmm.
So, he's theoretically magical. Because he's a Lestrange. Right. He might be a squib. We don't know. Because who knows what happened to him. But I'm not sure whenever they came, Mary Lou Barebone's stance on magic, but in the first movie she's a second Salemer and she's very anti-witch.
Okay, but
so why give it to her?
She runs an orphanage. Like, I don't, maybe they didn't know that she was a second Salemer and they were just like, oh, here's an orphanage we can drop him off at. But also, can I point out that it is highly unusual and like the statistics probably don't work out here that Lita just happened to switch out Corvus, who was a magical baby, with Credence, who was also a magical baby, on this, like, muggle boat.
On the Titanic, that's not the Titanic?
Yeah, like, how did she... Like, it's the... It just seems like very, very low chances that the one baby she switched for Corvus happened to also be magical. Unless this was a boat of wizards. Like,
that
was this an all-wizard boat? Was it a wizard-only cruise? I don't know.
And maybe that's why it sank, because, like... It's not the Titanic, but, like, a boat sank in the wizard one, too. But couldn't they magic themselves out?
I was going to say, if it's all the wizards on there, they'd definitely be able to save people if the boat went down, right?
That makes sense. I agree.
These are the questions that I have.
Yeah.
Dot, dot, dot. Yeah.
These are questions.
Many questions. Ugh.
Well, I was curious about, like, this Grimson thing. We see him, like, crumble and, like, become one with the wall.
Spooky.
And
yeah.
I just like want to know what this spell is. Do they say anything about this in the screenplay? About like, does it just say like Grimson enters the wall? Because
it does not even say that he enters the wall.
Oh.
It says the perfectly camouflaged Grimson emerges from the wall.
Okay, so like it would make sense if he like did a disillusionment charm on him so that on himself so that he was like invisible or whatever. But
yeah,
this seems like in the movie it makes it seem like some sort of eavesdropping. Yeah, he walks through the wall. Eavesdropping, like I'm gonna become one with my environment so that people don't know that I'm.
It looked super cool in the movie, whatever that was.
It did.
Like I was just like, ooh. What was that spell?
And then when Nagini like gets stuck in the wall.
Yeah, this entire scene is very visually beautiful. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
Nagini getting stuck in the wall is not in the screenplay. She just stands there.
Yeah, not at all. And I thought it was interesting, you know, when she does get startled when Grimson like grabs her out of the wall, it's like she totally loses control.
Yeah.
Does she turn into a snake?
Like halfway.
Yeah, she's like starting to. So it's almost like she can't control it when she gets startled, or it's like an instinct to like defend herself or something.
Yeah, I think both probably would make sense.
And I like that better than in the screenplay where she's just kind of standing there. because one, it gives more reason for her to not like be able to help defend, but also like it does show how she can lose control. Mm-hmm. Because before this, we've just seen her control turning into a snake. Well,
and we really don't know that much about maledicti.
Yeah.
Maledicti, is that the real word?
I don't know if it's the real world, but maledictuses does not sound nice. I like maledicti. It's like octopi.
It's actually called a murder of maledicti.
A murder of maledicti. Oh my goodness. What's the word for a group of snakes?
Oh.
Like a herd of snakes? A
group of snakes. It might depend on the
type of
snake.
A slither of snakes.
It's called a Roomba.
A pit, a nest, or a den.
Oh, a group of rattlesnakes is called a Roomba.
Ooh, that's cute.
Yeah.
I wish they were all called Roombas because that one's more fun. But I did not name them.
What type of snake is Nagini?
She's a viper.
Yeah, she's not a python, right? That's the false thing.
That's confirmed.
Thing.
She's not the Brazilian. Yeah. She's not the Zeus.
She was portrayed as a python.
Was she a boa constrictor?
I thought she was a venomous snake.
Oh.
She is a venomous snake, but she was portrayed as a python in the Harry Potter movies.
Which is not a venomous snake.
Incorrect. Yeah, it says contradicted the book's description.
I learned last night.
I'm a snake. That gif. Sorry.
I almost ran over a snake yesterday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, but I didn't.
I want to get a pet snake.
Ugh, I hate snakes.
I just want
to,
like,
creep me out.
I just want to be Britney Spears performing I'm a Slave for You at a drop of a hat. And I need a snake. I need banana.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, I don't like snakes, so I want to move on from this snake
talk. There's no special word for a group of vipers. Oh, but rattlesnakes all belong to the viper family.
Could they also be a Roomba? Because I just like that word.
Maybe Nagini's been a rattlesnake this whole time.
The real rattlesnakes were the...
Anyway.
Also switched at birth.
She turns into a Roomba.
Grimson kills Irma, and Credence then transforms into the Obscurus and tries to attack Grimson with splintered wood, but Grimson puts up this shield thingy, so he's protected.
I'm guessing that was just like a visual iteration of Protego?
Yeah, that's what I would think. Fancy.
Like Protego. They wanted to show what Protego looked like? I don't know.
I thought it was like a mixture of Protego and a bubblehead charm. Because it was a circle, so I thought bubble head charm.
Bubble body charm.
In the screenplay, it says a domed shield charm.
Oh, so it's like
it reminds
Protego.
Me of what they put over Hogwarts during...
Oh, yeah. That's probably
like
the same thing.
Protego Maxima? Is that what they say in the movie?
Yeah, just add Maxima to any spell, and it just makes it, super powerful. Avada Kedavra Maxima!
You really can't die more.
You super dead!
If you don't feel Avada Kedavra enough, if you add Maxima to the end of it.
That's what Voldemort should have
That'll
used
do it.
In the woods with Harry. That was his mistake.
He forgot Maxima.
If you don't have Lumos, a Maxima substitute will suffice. So something that I thought was kind of like weird was Credence as the Obscurus just throwing this splintered wood at the bubble, because that's not how it's described in the screenplay. It's just described as the Obscurus dives, pelting the shield charm like a million bullets, rising and reforming and diving again. Which sounds way cooler, and also I'm like, wouldn't you as an Obscurus hitting this bubble be like way more powerful than these pieces of wood?
I don't know, but I'm just confused how Nagini didn't die.
That too.
She was hiding in the wall.
I get that changing it to the wood was maybe more visually cool, but I also think the Obscurus turning into a million bullets would have been pretty cool, so. Also, I wrote in the doc that Grimson is a cop who's been sent to kill a mentally ill boy, but instead he shoots an innocent bystander, and just think that's relevant.
Well, he was actually sent there to kill the innocent bystander, wasn't he?
Well, okay, he was sent there by the government to kill the boy, but the wizard Hitler told him to shoot the innocent bystander. So,
all around, great guy.
We've got some issues with cops here, which we already knew, but...
So scene 57, we see Grimson in a dark alley with Grindy, which is so creepy. Grimson is a creepy creeper.
Even in this scene, I'm like, oh, that's the same white guy.
Yeah, I wrote in the doc that this definitely reminds me of, like, it gives me flashbacks to Fantastic Beasts with all of the creepy alley conversations between Graves, also known as Grindy, and Credence, and, like, their weird, like, we are so intense and having this really, really intense conversation, and it's important because it's intense.
It's in an alley.
So... I wanted to read the dialogue exchange in this scene because I feel like this was another scene that I didn't fully get when watching this movie.
Yeah.
I feel like this group of scenes that we have for this section is like a confusing group of scenes.
Yeah, yep. It really is. So anyway, that exchange, it starts with Grimson and he says, "She's dead." Grindelwald, "How did the boy take it?" Grimson, "He's sensitive. The ministry won't be happy when I tell them I've missed. They know my reputation." Grindelwald, "Listen to me. The disapproval of cowards is praise to the brave. Your name will be written in glory when wizards rule the world, and the clock is ticking faster. You watch over Credence. Keep him safe for the greater good." And Grimson repeats, "For the greater good." So I guess I never really paid much attention to this exchange, or I like missed parts of it. But obviously, Grimson is a double agent, and I realized that, but I never really realized that he intentionally missed Credence and didn't kill him. He took the job from the ministry to track him down, but he intended to keep him alive to be delivered to Grindelwald. So,
yeah.
Do you think he's gonna like end up working with Dumbledore and it's gonna be like a Snape thing again?
No,
I think he's gonna die.
I think Grimson is a bad guy. He's a bad dude.
I think he's gonna die and we're gonna be like, was that Grimson?
Oh, he's man, never, I'm so sad that random evil white guy got murdered. Darn.
He's not gonna be in the third movie. He's gonna be in the fourth movie. And
oh, Grimson.
So then we forget about him, but then he like appears and we're just like, that face.
I'm curious about how Grindelwald knew about Irma.
He's a seer.
Oh yeah.
Well, didn't Grindelwald somehow
skull
hookah. He got the information of Irma's apartment address to Credence somehow. Don't we learn later in the film that it was him?
I just assumed that he's been watching Credence and everything that Credence learns, like Grindy learns at the same time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of those things.
Yeah.
But
I remember
we don't
there
know.
Was some scene, I don't remember if it was before, it must have been before this, where he says, like, he has the information, he has the address or something like that.
I don't know.
Who knows?
I mean, there's we'll get to, you know, in the next episode or the one after, the scene where Grindelwald talks to Credence.
Yeah.
Which I don't really remember what he says there, because he starts talking and I'm like,
You lost me
this
already.
Guy again.
Yep. My question is, like, how did the ministry expect Grimson to kill Credence? Because he seems pretty invincible. And I'm wondering if they're, like, how do you kill an Obscurus? Is there, like, a specific way to do that? I'm guessing maybe you have to hit him with a killing curse when he's in human form.
That's what I would think.
Because that's, like, when he's at his weakest, I guess.
Well, do they die when, like, their host die? Because
probably
there
not.
Was a girl from the first movie that was mentioned, and she died. Mm-hmm. But, like, I'm assuming the Obscurus just didn't, like, continue
well,
to live.
But Newt says that he, like, he separated her from the Obscurus, so it might be a specific process to, like, separate
them. Or, like, Newt was able to preserve the Obscurus so that it didn't disappear.
Because I don't think another Obscurus has ever been preserved like that.
Yeah.
That we know of.
Well, Ariana Dumbledore.
Yeah.
We don't know that yet. That's just every fan theory.
I would think that if he just shot Credence directly in a human form, that would work, but
yeah,
I guess the ministry isn't even sure, and they're just trusting that Grimson will figure it out.
Because I feel like the only person who would know how to kill an Obscurus is probably Newt.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably doesn't know because he doesn't want to know. So that probably doesn't even
this
enter his mind.
This hasn't happened before.
Wasn't the ministry trying to get Newt to do Grimson's job at the beginning?
I mean, yeah.
And he refused. Yeah. So, I mean, that would make sense.
Grimson was their second choice.
Yes. So let's move on to a more fun scene.
Okay. So scene 58 is much more happy. Newt and Jacob are sitting at a cafe.
Love them.
And I love how they're just both staring at that couple that's at a different table.
It's and he's
so
got the
awkward,
feather under the bowl.
I have so many questions
like
about
not
this
talking
feather
to each other, not looking at each
because
other.
Because it's just spinning crazy like a compass, and no one is like paying attention to it. If I was at a Parisian cafe and that was happening at the table next to me, I'd be like, what is happening?
I think they're still in like the wizarding area.
Are they at French Diagon Alley?
I think so.
I think
they don't.
So too.
The rest of this movie, this is one of the most confusing things. They never make clear, like, if they're in Paris proper or in, like, magical Paris. Because it seems like magical Paris is.
Oh, see,
bigger
I
than
thought
Diagon
they
Alley.
Left magical Paris when they left the circus.
See, I don't know. But it's the scene after our group of scenes is the one with the Zawu in the middle of the street. And.
Yeah. And that.
And there's
okay.
just people there who, like, are reacting because it's a giant thing. But, like, they, like, Tina doesn't be like, we have to erase all their memories. So I think that's all, I think they're just, I think that there's, it's not just a Diagon Alley, that it's, like, a wider, like, neighborhood.
But what the important thing in this scene is what is Newt thinking about when he is not listening to Jacob talk about missing Queenie? Because
according to the screenplay, he's watching for who the feather points at. But that's not really
no, he
will.
I mean,
like,
in the movie, he's not even looking at the feather, is he? He's just kind of staring off into the distance. And Queenie, or Jacob's going off about Queenie, and he, like, you know, says, don't you think, or something. He asks Newt a question, and Newt just goes, sorry? Like, obviously he's not listening at all, so he's lost in thought this entire time, staring out into the distance. And I mean, I'm sure some people might say he's thinking about Tina,
yes,
but I think he was thinking about his animals.
That too.
Because they're staring at that couple, I always thought that, like, Jacob was obviously talking about missing Queenie, and I assumed Newt was thinking about Tina too, just because of how they're both, like, staring at them, like, oh, look at that.
I'm sure he was thinking, like, I wonder where that Zowu is right now. I hope he's okay. Has he gotten enough food and water today? I wonder if anybody's pet him. He really needs some love. I don't want him to be all out there all alone. I really hope he's okay.
He might, like, be on with something.
I'm sure that's what he's thinking.
He's thinking, if Tina was here, we'd go save that Zowu and live happily ever after.
That's a good combination of both of them. I like that.
See, I just thought it was, like, Newt being awkward.
That too.
I think okay. It's all these things.
Like, I was just like, whenever he died, like, that's the first thing. I was like, because, like, Eddie Redmayne said that he believes that Newt is on the autism spectrum. So it's just like, oh, like,
absolutely.
He's just, like, showing those signs because that's how he sees Newt. And I was just like, okay, I'm not going to, like, really.
Well, literally anybody could just get lost in thought and not listen to the person that's talking to them. Like, you don't have to be on the autism spectrum to not listen to your friend talking to you.
That's just how I took it, though.
Well, and also Jacob's just going on about Queely. Newt's like, okay.
But anyways, after Jacob realizes Newt is just not paying attention to him, he asks Newt if he's sure the guy they're looking for is there at the cafe. And Newt says he's sure because the feather says so.
How?
I just love Jacob's little like nod that he does like, all right, then.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, sure.
Like, how does he not, like, yes, he's, like, a nomad, a muggle, use whatever word you want to describe him. But, like, what does that mean?
What does what mean?
I don't know.
Like, the feather is physically in a jar, and how does Newt know when to, like, pick it up when
Yusuf comes? Like, it makes no sense. So it's like, oh, my owner is here because I can't point one direction.
Oh, anymore. Doesn't it like tap on the glass? Like, I'm ready to get out now.
Oh.
When Kamo comes out, it does go back into his hat. And that's how they know specifically that it's him.
We're not there yet, though. There's a creepy bathroom scene.
Yes.
Yeah. And that's where we see Kamo using an eyedropper to put liquid in his eye. We see the little, like, tentacle
thing. Yes, and we can see on his hand a little bit of, like, his scar. And here's what the screenplay says, which is not what happens in the movie. A cramped and dirty bathroom. First of all, this bathroom is not cramped, so. Kama stares into the mirror, his featherless fedora perched on the tap. Suddenly, his face twitches. He raises his bandaged hand to his eye and rubs it, shaking his head. He removes his hand and stares at his reflection. We close in. A tiny tentacle is visible at the corner of his eye. He whimpers in distress and gropes in his suit pocket for a small bottle of bright green liquid, which he drops into his eye with a dropper. Another whimper of pain as the tentacle withdraws. So I guess in the movie they were like, we don't feel like animating the tentacle right now.
I wish it was a bright green liquid, though.
Yeah. So, like, just, what is this just, bright green liquid? Like, is it...
It's clearly a potion.
So they make prescription eye drops specifically for, like, little eye tentacle water demon thingies? Or is it just, well, like...
it's obviously not working.
I guess not. Like, Visine for tentacles. Well,
when did he start using these? Did he start using those that day? Because I don't think it would start working, like, after, like, the first use.
Is it just... Maybe it's just supposed to... Maybe it's just supposed to, like, make it go away. Like, when the tentacle starts to, like, creep out of his eye, it's supposed to make it, like, go back in so that muggles don't see it and are, like, freaked out.
I don't know. This whole thing just confuses me. Like, I don't understand if he knows that he has this thing in his eye.
How did he get hit? Or,
like, see, in the movie, it almost makes more sense not seeing the tentacle, and he just thinks there's something wrong with his eye and is using... regular
Visine.
Eye drops,
Visine for tentacles.
Right.
Yeah, if whatever that was back in the 20s. But yeah.
The whole thing is just weird.
It's weird, but I kind of wish that it had shown the tentacles because that would have explained the scene a little bit more.
Well, because that plays a role later in the movie. So just like seeing
two scenes from now, it plays a role.
Yeah.
But, like, by the time we get to the scene where it matters, I've already forgotten about this bathroom scene because nothing interesting happened in it. Because I was like, okay, he's just putting in eye drops.
Oh, boy. So then we go outside the cafe again, and Kama walks towards Newt and Jacob, and the feather goes back into his hat.
And then Jacob's like, oh, bonjour. And Kama just turns around and walks away.
He doesn't even say anything.
It's so funny. I love Kama. He's just like, all right.
Not dealing with this right now. Peace.
I think he's kind of playing it as like, haha, bonjour. But like, oh, you're just a random stranger saying hello. But
he has the stranger danger.
Yeah, unlike everyone else.
Everyone should have Stranger Danger about him, yet he's the only one that actually exhibits right. the Stranger Danger.
Oh, and hey, Newt attempts to speak French to him, which is nice. And then he doesn't anymore, but...
So that whole exchange is when Newt and Jacob are asking if he's seen Tina. And that's when we get the whole where he says, is she tall, dark, rather? And Newt and Jacob fill in the blank differently. Jacob says intense and Newt says beautiful.
And then they both yeah, kind of like do a 180 and one goes, no, yeah, she's beautiful. Oh, she's kind of intense too.
Yeah, it's really hard to hear in the movie, but Newt does mutter, like, she's intense, too. Also, I really gotta give more props to Newt here, because when he's trying to ask, like, have you seen this person, Tina, Kama's just being like, ah, Paris is a large city. And Newt's like, well, when Ors go, she's an Or, when Ors go missing, the ministry comes looking. Ah, I guess we better just report it.
Intimidation tactic.
And then Kama's like, oh, is she tall?
Yeah, he's sneaky. Smart. He's sneaky boy.
So he was sneaky there, but then he did just go with Kama and let Kama lock him up in 5 minutes. But
yeah.
But they escaped in like 2 minutes. Like,
thanks to Pickett. This is why these movies are Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, because they literally would it's like the beasts That's are right. Hermione, you know, like they literally would not have been able to do anything so without the beasts. And so they're like,
that's so true.
Pivotal to the success of the antagonists, of the protagonists of the story, not the antagonists.
So when they do go with Kama and they end up in his hideout there underground, Tina is sleeping on the floor.
I thought she was just laying on the floor.
she's
like, just like, just be like, the floor this is cool. My life now.
I've given up.
But the screenplay has some really adorable description when Newt and Tina are staring at each other, and it says, each has thought of the other daily for a year.
How are they supposed to act that? Like, you have to put that in words.
I have thought of you every day for a year.
I mean, they're giving each other hard eyes. Also, I think this time, this moment in the screenplay is the only time we're told that, like, it's supposed to be a year later. I thought it was only a few months.
Well, that was at the beginning of the movie. Now we're, like, at scene 60.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A week passes with every scene.
But, like, I believe it's, like, 3 or 6 months at, like, the very beginning of the film.
Yeah.
What?
Well, Newt had to figure out how to go to Paris.
I don't think 6 months passes from the beginning of the film to this scene.
I think, it's like 3 to 6 months later when Grindelwald escapes, but they don't clarify after that.
That's true. He had to get that nifty haircut sometime. He got that in the 6 months.
That takes like 30 minutes to get a haircut. I got my haircut like last week.
Not if you cut one piece of hair every day.
Yeah, they never clarify how much time passes after Grindelwald escapes.
He got a haircut, not a hair's cut.
I guess it could be like, oh, it's like 3 months... 4 months later, whatever, from the last movie, Grindelwald escapes, and then, like, you know, 4 or 5 months later, all this stuff is happening.
Well, Newt had to figure out how to, like, travel illegally. I don't know, like, how easy that is.
Yeah, but that happened, like, in the movie, that takes a day.
Yeah, like, what are they going to do, show, like, a montage of, like, 5 months of him studying on how to travel illegally? I don't think that that's realistic.
I totally thought that like took a lot longer. I thought
I mean,
that would be like,
definitely
oh,
doing that between the movies, but not during the events of the movie.
An intense montage of him studying at the library, studying at his house.
It's not him and Jacob sitting at the wizard library figuring out how to travel illegally.
I'm just like having flashbacks to Legally Blonde.
Anyway, it's almost like this movie doesn't make any sense.
What? I like how Tina doesn't use any of this time where she's, like, staring lovingly into Newt's eyes to warn them that, like,
okay,
they're gonna
so
be trapped in 2 seconds.
The screenplay clarifies she thinks she's been rescued because they're there. Because she doesn't see Kama yet.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes sense.
And then he kind of comes out of nowhere.
Also, I wanted to say, I really like, while Tina and Newt are, like, giving each other hard eyes, Jacob just, like, salutes her.
He does? I have to go back and watch that. I didn't realize he saluted really her.
True. He's just like, hello. I'm also here.
Sergeant Tina. Good to see you.
Everyone should salute Tina when they see her, honestly.
Oh, Jacob.
Man. And then we see that that weird, creepy wall with all the writing for the first time.
That we spent hours analyzing before the movie came out. I mean, we learned a lot from that wall. It's a shame that you don't see it more.
I guess I'm unclear as to whether or not, because it's obviously in where Tina is trapped. So was it something that Kama had written on the wall and then trapped Tina in there? So. Or did she write on the wall while she was trapped?
I always assumed this was Kama's, like, lair, and that was kind of his, like, case map. It's labeled
it was his Kama's secret fire. Evil lair.
His murder board?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that. It definitely, like...
Maybe it's even a cool magic spell where, like, it travels and projects onto different walls, you know?
A magic projector.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the only things that we can really see on there are references to the Lestranges. And Corvus, so
which is what we saw when we watched the trailer and we were analyzing it, and that's how we were like, Lestranges, he's a Lestrange, we have this figured out,
this was easy,
psych, he's easy. Actually a Dumbledore, psych, he's actually nobody, psych, he's actually a
maybe he's like Grindelwald's brother, have we considered that?
No.
That would be interesting.
Plot twist.
I don't know what the logic there would be.
It's like Rey in Star Wars. He's actually like that Sith's son or whatever. I don't remember his name.
Palpatine.
Palpatine? Is that what it is?
Yes, Palpatine.
Yes, he's actually...
Star Wars spoilers.
He's actually... Oh, sorry. Spoilers for if you haven't seen Rise of Skywalker yet.
He's Palpatine's son. He's Rey's dad.
Who's Palpatine?
The bad guy in Star Wars.
I thought that was Darth Vader.
He's the bad guy.
There's more than one bad guy in Star Wars.
Palpatine's the
Well, yeah, there's also Darth Maul. But I don't do Star Wars.
Oh my gosh.
Anyway, we are so off topic.
We hired this guy? Okay.
Where were we?
So anyway. I know, I was like, where did we leave off? So Kama comes in and he disarms Newt and bars go up on the doors. He says he'll return when Credence is dead. You see, either he dies or I do. So basically, neither can live while the other survives.
Yeah. Definitely a foreshadowing of the Unbreakable Vow, for sure.
But, Kama casts, like, Expelliarmus, but he does that and the wands come to him. But I always pictured it like, oh, the wand just kind of like go to the ground.
Well, it's the disarming spell, so I guess it makes sense that whoever casts it would then get the wand.
I think it is supposed to be, at least originally, that Expelliarmus just makes the wand fly out of your hand. But I guess if it...
Maybe it was an Expelliarmus...
flying at the right angle, he could still catch it.
Maybe it was an Expelliarmus Accio hybrid. Dexterous. Expelliacio.
Yeah. Maybe it's Expelliarmus... verbally, but Accio in his head. So.
Expelliarmus Maximus.
Oh my god.
Accio-armus.
Oh, it's Expelliarmus Maxima, because that's how you make things strong.
Right.
You just throw in Maxima.
Exactly.
He was just, that was the nonverbal part of the spell. Was the Maxima. We just didn't hear it because it wasn't important to Newt's journey.
Jacob in this entire scene is super cute, though, because his facial expressions, you have to watch them throughout the entire scene because it just...
He's so funny.
It just makes me laugh. And then when...
Thank you, Dan.
After Kama, obviously, collapses. That's the word I was trying to think of. And they're like, great, now we're trapped in, our captor is knocked out. And Pickett then unlocks the door. Jacob's little, like, scream is literally, like, the cutest thing.
Yeah, he's like, ah!
He's, like, the one that, like, truly is excited. Like, Newt and Tina are like, oh, I guess we'll, like, spend the rest of eternity in here
Newt
together.
Newt and Tina are like, well, I guess we'll die.
We've accepted our fate.
And Jacob's like...
This is, like, Jacob's giggle water.
Yeah.
It's the same one.
For the second
exactly.
film. Exactly. It's like, I love
he needs
it.
To
talk about how funny... this moment, it like Kama has perfected the perfect twist villain exit, and then he just gets attacked by a water demon in his eye and collapses to the floor.
Oh no, he's
so dramatic, and then just falls over, and it's so funny. I wish the movie appreciated it more, like how funny that is.
I want to start a petition that Jacob has to have at least one Gillywater moment in every movie.
Yeah,
I feel like they will, just for like a little comic relief, because I think him just going kind of giggling was really funny.
He is the comic relief.
He's just like, woo!
it's Dan. Like, I think it's just him, because in the screenplay it says Jacob launches for the door trying to break it down, which does not happen.
Nope.
That's while Newt and Tina are talking, and then Pickett picks the lock and the bar is open, and it just says Jacob yells, Newt.
Huh.
Is that why his name's Pickett?
Yes.
Are you just realizing this right now?
Well, how often has he, unlocked a door? How often has he picked a lock?
Doesn't he do that in the first movie?
Yeah.
He does not do that in the first one.
Yes, he does. He unlocks their shackles, right?
And isn't, aren't bow truckles, a defining characteristic of bow truckles is that they're good at picking locks?
Yeah.
I thought so, yeah.
I clearly don't know anything.
It's like calling a Niffler shiny. Okay. I don't know.
Bow Chuckle Maxima.
This episode is just going to be called...
That's not the episode.
Yeah, this episode is just going to be called Episode Maxima.
Speak Beastie Maxima.
Yes. Episode 115 Maxima.
I think that should just be it, just the word Maxima.
I feel like we're all really loopy this whole episode to make up for how serious the first 5 minutes were.
Well, because it makes no sense.
Funny. Other people are going to be like, what the hell? Yeah. So Tina says that Comet is a lead in her investigation because she thinks he knows where Credence is. So she basically needs him alive, which
I don't know
how she thought she was going
to. Yeah, okay, so she says, Mr. Scamander, and Newt gets this really sad look on his face. Like, he's about to be like, you can call me Newt.
And well, it's just it's a mean move for her to call him Mr. Scamander, because it's like, oh...
Yeah.
Are you just going to pretend that we didn't, go through this extremely stressful and dangerous life-bonding situation in the last movie? Come on, we're friends now. You don't call me Mr. Scamander.
Yeah.
But does she know that he's not engaged to Lita?
Not yet.
But So, your exes, when you find out they're engaged to someone else, do you call them, Mr.?
Oh, a lot of my exes are dead to me.
Actually, yes, all my exes should be calling me Mix Mickelson.
So when I get engaged, everyone I used to be romantically involved with needs to call me Mrs. Carp.
Yep.
I'm not even saying when I'm engaged, because I'm not. Legit. I'm just saying in general. If you're my ex, the word is out there.
You don't get to use my
God,
name.
I hope my ex doesn't listen to this. That would be weird.
Well, if you get a text calling you Miss Mickelson,
<I'll> know.
You'll know.
Anyway.
So their conversation gets interrupted by a roar.
And I spelled roar like rah.
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 That would be the Zawu.
I love that.
Just because I thought that was funny.
I just love Newt's simple statement of facts.
I mean, that the way that he says it, that would be the Zawu, does line up with what you were saying earlier about, he's just thinking about, where's the Zawu?
Yeah. He was worried about it.
Like, it's any animal.
Yeah, he was worried about it, and he's like, oh, great, that's the Zawu.
I was looking for you. And I'm just it's this huge beast that's essentially wreaking havoc on magical France, magical Paris, or, normal Paris.
It's not wreaking havoc. It's a peaceful
creature.
And it
can, we know from the book that, it can just destroy cities. It can travel, I had to double check, it can travel 1,000 miles a day, so it's kind of wild that it's still there.
It can, doesn't mean it has to.
Yeah.
Well, it was also caged up, so it might be...
That's true. It also has the ability to warp space around itself for quick travel. as demonstrated during Newt Scamander's escape from the French Ministry of Magic.
Yeah. It's a pretty cool creature. I love Zabu's.
Yeah.
It's pretty awesome. Its tail is real
cool. It's real cool. It's just a big kitty.
Yeah.
I mean, whoever's on the next episode will get to talk about
that. I know, I'm kind of jealous.
Yeah. I kept watching just because I was like, I want to watch this scene.
He's my favorite. I have a Funko Pop of the Zabu. He's so cute.
That's good.
That's good.
So enthusiastic.
No, I'm happy for you.
Really, I am.
I am. Like, How about you go ahead and read that conclusion for us, Rex?
Okay, so to wrap everything up, the podcast question is, how did Mary Lou Barebone end up with Corvus / Credence? And remember that you could buy our shirts as well as visit our Etsy shops, because we have pins and stickers at etsy.com/shop/speakbeastie. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you can email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. And make sure to leave us a review on iTunes or whatever podcast platform you listen to us on.
You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie.
I'm Amy.
I'm Helene.
I'm Shannon.
And I'm Rex. Case closed.